Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here with you, and entering the studio, look who's here, as he is every Monday afternoon, Alan Adams of the Maine Edge joining us to talk about movies and more this afternoon. But Alan, we have a very special introduction for you today. I think you'll like a lot.
Against a plumber and an architect.
Oh, you guys.
Both with a PhD. I was tense. I was nervous.
There's a method to our madness here. Did he say Art Fleming? I forgot how old that was.
The song is.
Wow. Predating Trebek. Why are we playing that? Well, first of all, it's not going to happen, but our friend Alan Adams is indeed going to win on Jeopardy. Alan, you got the call last week.
I did. We talked about it a little bit on the air when it went down. I auditioned in New York City back in April, and we had talked about how I felt like I had put forth a pretty solid performance, and I felt like I had made myself into a quality candidate. But again, they tell you, they're like, you know, I mean, they only select from all the auditions they do over the course of a year. They select about 400 people for a season worth of tapings. And they tell you 18 months is the deal. So it's like you will, if they're going to contact you, they will call it to contact you sometime in the next 18 months. Happily, I got to wait 16 fewer months than that before I heard back from somebody. So I'm going out at the tail end of next month to film.
Now, so I know they tape multiple shows, what, five a day?
Yeah.
Do they only tape one day a week?
I believe so. Yes. I believe,
Trebek has the greatest job in the world.
Yes. Yes, he does.
That's why he's still going at 76 or whatever he is.
I'm coming on. I'll be taping. I don't know where in the order I fall. So I might tape right away. I might not be on until the last episode. Fingers crossed. I just don't want to be one of those PUDs who's like doesn't even make it to Final Jeopardy. That's it's one of those things where it's like I'm a regular watcher of the show, and sometimes, like the way the categories fall, sometimes you get shut out.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, I have a pretty broad knowledge base, but there are gaps. Everybody's got gaps.
Will you prep? Will you study?
There are a couple of things that I've kind of been considering. My big Achilles heel when it comes to this stuff is geography. I don't know where anything is, and I don't know what it's called. So that's something that I'll probably try to. Some basic stuff. Like, I'm pretty good on, like, state capitals and stuff, but I'll do, like, countries of the world, like, bodies of water, highest peaks, that kind of stuff.
What's your dream category?
Well, it's got to be, it's got to be, like, baseball history or something like that, or, basically, like, anything sports-related I feel strongly about, only because, like, I have I'm solid in, movies, television, literature, that sort of thing. But I feel like with sports, the likelihood of another person also having a broad knowledge base in that category is less. Like, I don't think the Jeopardy crowd's necessarily super sports-heavy. So I feel like that would be sort of an advantage for me. But as long as the reality is, like, I'm pretty good about most stuff, especially the sorts of, because it is general knowledge. It's not like they're doing a lot of deep cuts. And so if you have just, if you know a little bit about a lot, which I feel like I kind of do, I feel like I'll do okay. Whether or not that translates to a win, we'll see, but I think I'll do okay.
Oh, we're confident. The Bible. Oh, no. No,
no.
No! The one that always gets me, and I don't see it as much anymore, but was Potent Potables.
Any of the, like, the rhyme time or the before and after, like any of those wordplay type categories, like, give them to me. Give them me. Like, I love that stuff. The Bible's a tough one for me. If I see contemporary pop music up there, I'm actually probably kind of screwed, because I don't remember the last time I listened to, music. yeah, it's going to be like the grunge era. It's like, yeah, no.
Well, talk to some of our younger members in the focus group, and maybe they can let you know what the kids are listening to.
Hit me to what the kids are into, Daddy-O. Well,
it's very exciting news. We look forward to it. Although, as I was saying to you the other night, the toughest part for you, but also for all of us, is when you come back, you won't be able to tell us how you did.
Can't tell you a thing. Can't tell you
what's what. What's the delay usually?
It's like a couple of months. So it's going to be, yes, they told me that the week of shows that are being filmed on my day, that week, they will air the week of October 29th.
Wow.
So October 29th through November 2nd. So there's a significant chance, that that my episode or one of my episodes, fingers crossed, will air, while I'm preparing to introduce the first evening of the Improv Me Festival.
That's fantastic.
So, who knows? Maybe we'll, if that's how it works out, maybe we'll organize and have a pre-festival watch party in the space. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're going to be there a while. I mean, listen, Ken Jennings, I'm pretty sure is when the word gets to him is like, well, it was a good run.
Look, I want to be able to put Jeopardy champion in front of my name. Anything after that is gravy. But again, it's the experience is enough. And, I've wanted to do this since I was a kid, like since I was 8 years old, since I knew that Jeopardy was a thing, like I wanted to be on Jeopardy. And so the fact that's coming to fruition is pretty exciting.
Well, I'm living vicariously through you, so don't screw up.
I'll do my best.
Let's talk movies. You saw three this weekend. Do we start with the sequels or the original?
Yeah, let's go through the sequels real quick. Not least because that third movie, I think I'm going to struggle to figure out how exactly we're going to talk about it. So we'll start with Mamma Mia. Here we go again. I'm a big fan of movie musicals. Always have been. But here's the thing. I had never seen Mamma Mia.
Oh,
I had never seen the movie. I had never seen the stage show. I'd never seen any of it. And so actually the day before we were going to go see the sequel, I'm like, you know what? I should see this movie. Sat down, watched it, was delighted by it. And so I'm like, oh, okay. And then we go and watch the sequel and it's like, oh yeah, it's basically like, it's one of those movies that's both sequel and prequel. So it's basically like, it's like Mamma Mia 2 and Mamma Mia Origins at the same time. because you've got in the present day, well, present day, air quotes, there are a lot of timeline problems with this movie that you really need to sort of ignore. Because once you start thinking about them and you start pulling on that thread, a lot of things start to unravel. But anyway, so air quotes, present day. Sophie, played by Amanda Seyfried, is getting ready to have a grand opening of the hotel. The her mom's space from the original movie has been converted into this luxury hotel in pursuant to her mom's dream. Her mom, Donna, played by Meryl Streep, who has it happens right away, so it's not really a spoiler. Who's dead? Like she's dead.
Huh.
She died a year before the air quotes present day. And so Sophie has been trying to help bring her mom's dream to fruition with the help of her. It's unclear if they ever got married or not, but her whatever he is, Sky, played by Dominic Cooper, and her now stepfather, because he married her mom at the end of the first movie. Sam, I don't know. I mix up all their names. Sam, I think, the architect, played by Pierce Brosnan. And so they're doing a grand reopening thing, and so she invites her multiple dads because Mamma Mia is a weird movie. So we get to see the swashbuckling Swede Bill, played by Stellan Skarsgård, and uptight banker Harry, played by Colin Firth. And they come back to this lovely Greek island to celebrate hotel stuff. It doesn't really matter.
No.
Look, none of this matters. The story does not matter because it's the music of ABBA and it's awesome. And I love ABBA. I'm ride or die with Bjorn and company. So I'm delighted by this movie. You know, big musical numbers. Here's the joy of a movie like this. And too often a movie musical will try too hard to sort of endow the proceedings with some kind of like something resembling realism. And that just makes the musical moments kind of incongruous. They don't really fit. None of that in Mamma Mia. Like, they are unapologetically leaning into the dorkiness that is musical theater. Like, it's just like people just start singing, and it's not like there are no nods or winks to the realistic portrayal of any of this. It's just like people just bust out into song and dance and do these gigantic production numbers. Sometimes they're dancing through the streets. Sometimes they're dancing on boats. Every once in a while they slow it down a little bit for a ballad, but let's be honest, it shines brightest when there's like 85 people on screen, like waving their hands around and scream singing Mamma Mia. Like, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Pierce Brosnan still can't sing, but that's okay.
That's all right.
Meanwhile, that's half the movie. The other half is set back in 1979, when young Donna, played by Lily James, first makes her way to this Greek island. And this is where we see there's some certain relationship related questions that come up with the first movie. Namely, how is it that we can be so confused about who young Sophie's father is? Well, we find out, and it turns out Donna got around a little bit. so we get to see her encounter the young versions of all these dudes. It's the 70s, I guess. Like, things were running a little fast and loose as things as things go. She encounters all these dudes, and then gets knocked up, and then away we go.
Can you hear the drums?
So everyone from the original movie is back. Some great new young performers, and a couple of new characters. Andy Garcia's here. He does some good stuff.
Sure.
And then she doesn't show up until about three quarters of the way through the movie, but you see her in the trailer. Cher's in the movie. And it's like, oh yeah, no, this is very cool. Like, this is exactly what you want. You want Cher to show up in a helicopter.
Does she sing?
She does, yeah.
Wow, all right.
Yep. In her first on-screen performance since like 2010.
Really?
Like, she hadn't been in a movie in like seven, 8 years. Like, I didn't realize that. So, yeah, like, look, it's stupid. Like, the movie's stupid, but it's super fun.
Yeah,
like,
it's summer.
You know, you love if you love the music, or if you love musicals at all, like, you're going to have a really good time. And frankly, if you're looking for a respite from, explosions and gunfire and the assorted business.
All caps tweeting by our fearless leader. Yeah,
literally anything that you're going to find at the movie theater. This is a nice bit of counter programming.
By the way, I was just refreshing my memory here. ABBA back with new music, first time ever in December for this big television special. But there'll be avatars.
Oh, of course,
which makes it in some weird way even better.
I love
even
it.
More perfect.
I love everything about it. God love them.
A special and a quasi tour,
sort of.
Yeah,
like, there's a lot of sort of in the whole situation, and again, I don't think I'd have it any other way.
No. All right, that's movie number one. Number two, the sequel to The Equalizer.
Yes, The Equalizer 2, Electric Boogaloo. it's funny. It's kind of strange that it took so long for Denzel to kind of get his get his Neeson on.
Exactly.
The Equalizer back in 2014, it saw him teaming up with director Antoine Fuqua, and they have a great relationship. They've done Training Day and like all that stuff. Like, those guys get each other, so that's a really great relationship. And that movie was good. Like, it was it's one of those things where it's the kind of movie that really brings to the forefront this idea that of all of our movie stars, Denzel's probably the best actor. And when I say probably, I mean he's definitely the best actor in terms of just talent. You've got a lot of these guys who kind of get by on just the being charismatic on screen, like having that presence. And that's great. Denzel has that, and he can also act.
Yeah.
To see him like doing this sort of almost B-movie-esque kind of punch 'em up sort of movie is pretty cool. Like, it's like he clearly is having a good time. He's back as the character Robert McCall. He's living in Boston, working as a Lyft driver. and basically freelance doing his equalizing, like going out and like helping random people. Like we first see him on a train somewhere in like Turkey or something, tracking down a kidnapped little girl and you know, beating up a bunch of guys in a bar car on a train, which is again fantastic because watching Denzel punch things is pretty phenomenal. But as things go, it turns out that Denzel's not able to keep himself isolated from his old life for much longer. He's only got a few friends who even know he's still alive, but when tragedy befalls some of those friends, he's forced to reveal himself to his old partner, this guy named Agent York, played by Pablo Pascal. And and so he's basically trying to track down the ne'er-do-wells who have harmed his loved, well, the closest thing he has to loved ones anymore. Honestly, I don't really want to talk too much more about about the plot. No. Like that's close enough. Like it's basically Denzel like punching guys, and then Denzel wandering around trying to figure out who he needs to punch next, and then punching some more guys. You know, and there's a couple of subplots. Like he's got like there's a kid who lives in his building who's a budding artist who he sort of serves as a tough love mentor to. And then there's like a regular, like one of his regular Lyft customers, who's trying to establish provenance for a painting that his family lost during World War II. And so you get these subplots that are, I mean, they're perfectly engaging. Either one of them could have been pretty much left on the cutting room floor, and it would have made a huge difference as far as the movie is concerned. Because again, it's about Denzel. It's about, you know, putting him on screen for, you know, an hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours or whatever, and just letting him like Denzel it up.
There you go.
Like, and this is a guy who really, he's clearly having a good time. And you know, I mean, his project previous to this was like The Iceman Cometh on Broadway. You know what I mean? Like, this is a dude who clearly wants to just, like, he just wants to mix it up. Like,
right.
And you know, when you reach the sort of the age, the talent level that someone like that achieves, yeah, do whatever the hell you want, Denzel. I'm going to watch it.
There you go.
You're going to watch it. We're all going to watch it because you're Denzel.
All right. That's two. Now, the movie that has generated so much buzz around the country over the weekend. I'm so excited that it's here at Bangor Mall Cinemas. Sorry to bother you.
Yeah, I was super surprised that it made its way up here just because it did not seem like the sort of movie that was going to get tremendously wide release. And let's be honest, like, it's got to get pretty wide to make it up here. And that's just the nature of the beast. So kudos to Scott and Sue and all the folks over there at Bangor Mall 10 for trying to make this, you know, for really kind of making an effort to bring stuff in that's a little bit different. They've been doing a great job of that this summer. Sorry to bother you, written and directed by Boots Riley, and I don't know how to talk about this movie.
I gave a little capsule of what I've read and know earlier that I think is reasonably accurate. African-American gets a job. He's doing some telemarketing and discovers that he has this quote unquote gift to be able to talk like a white person.
That's the basic gist of it. Like, his name's Cassius Green. He's looking for work. He winds up roping up with this telemarketing company, and he goes in, and it immediately becomes clear that it's a little different going on here. There's this special elevator that only the what they call power callers are able to use, and we don't really find out what the power callers are initially. He's brought on to do this telemarketing gig. He's initially struggling, and he's struggling pretty hard until the guy sitting next to him, who is, of course, Danny Glover, explains to him the idea of using his white voice. And it's like, oh, you know, and it's like, and he, they go through this whole thing where it's like, oh, is it this? And it's like, you know, he does a thing where he holds his nose and gets all nasal. He's like, no, it's not about that. It's about the state of mind. It's basically you want to sound like they think they are supposed to sound, and that's when the white voice comes out, which is an overdubbed voice by a very recognizable actor who I am not going to say right now.
Okay.
Because he is not listed in the credits. And so I'm assuming he's uncredited for a reason. And so I'm mm-hmm. going to leave it at that.
Sure.
What follows, that's about as far as I can go without some significant spoilers, because things get weird.
Now, it's a comedy.
Yes.
But there are also other elements.
It gets very dark in places. You know, it's set in this sort of skewed, like this sort of cracked mirror, like alternate present. Mm-hmm. Like this is a world where the most popular television show on the air is something called I Got the Bleep Kicked Out of Me. and one of the biggest businesses in the world is this outfit called Worry Free, which basically involves families signing lifetime contracts where they're housed and fed and put to work.
Wow.
And everything that kind of goes mm-hmm. with that. Their CEO, by the way, a guy by the name of, I believe, Steve Lift, played marvelously by Armie Hammer. But yeah, it's, you know, so there's that stuff. And as the plot develops, things go in directions that you really, like, the ending of this movie, I could have said 50 things that I'm like, oh, it could be this, it could be that, maybe it's this thing. I wasn't even close. I was not even close, Rich. Wow. And it's so bizarre. It's like this sort of modern day fable with elements of like the supernatural and the surreal and absurdism. And it's just so smart and challenging and just difficult to parse. The idea of, I still haven't written the review because I don't know how I'm going to do it. Like, I just don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things. I saw it yesterday afternoon, and I'm still processing, and I'm still thinking of all these things, like these little moments. I mean, it's just a magnificent piece of filmmaking, and it's funny, and it's thought-provoking, and it's unsettling, and it's just all these things, all this these visceral reactions that it evokes in you. It's like, it's a reminder of how of what kind of power the medium can have when you've got people who are passionate and talented, you know, steering the ship. Again, I don't know how else to say this. I can't tell you any more about the movie except go see the movie. Like, just go see it. You might hate it. Like, there's a very real chance that you'll hate it. But you will not be able to dispute that it is a piece of a unique piece of work.
Sorry to bother you. Alan Adams telling us what he can about it here on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
And congratulations again on Jeopardy.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk more about that as we roll through the next few weeks in advance. We'll throw questions your way.
Sure.
Get you ready. Do what we can do.
Appreciate that.